ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
G'day, Dr. Carl here. Back in 1986, I could not wait to see teacher Krista McAuliffe on the Space Shuttle Challenger launch into space.
Roger, Challenger. Obviously a major malfunction.
We could not believe what we were seeing. The Challenger Legacy. To hear more, search for science fiction and look out for The Challenger Legacy. Find it wherever you get your podcasts or on the ABC Listen app.
While all eyes have been on Susan Lee and the Liberal leadership, it's Nationals leader David Littleproud that will face a leadership spill on Monday. Queensland MP Colin Boyce says the National Party is committing, and I quote, political suicide by splitting from the formal coalition, and will move a spill motion against David Littleproud. But it is not all smooth sailing for the government, although if you look at what the coalition has been doing, they are giving them a rather easy ride. Inflation figures for December have landed, and they're much higher than expected at 3.8%. The figure raises the likelihood of a rate hike when the RBA meets next week, and it adds to cost of living pressures and the general problems for the Albanese government. Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis.
And I'm David Spears. And PK, happy birthday to you.
Are you singing to me?
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear PK. Happy birthday, mate.
That's very lovely of you, David. Yes, it is my birthday. Thank you for my lovely producer, Lara, making everyone have to say happy birthday to me. Thanks, no. David. I do appreciate it. Yes, it is my birthday. And there is no thing I want to be doing more than recording a podcast with you talking about stubborn inflation.
You know, people might think you're joking. But you are not. I know you.
No, it's
this
true.
Is exactly what you want to do on your birthday.
It's true. You know, there are some people who are like, I take the day off for my birthday. And I always think, why would you do that, man? Like, why not do your favourite thing? Now, I suppose it depends what kind of job you do. And I understand people do very difficult jobs,
exactly.
Some of them very physical.
We're
as
very
well.
Lucky.
We have great jobs. And I love my job. So let's get into it. Inflation. Oh, my G. I read this figure and I did a double take. Bit of drama for you, but seriously, it deserves it. This is a massive 3.8% in December. That's very hot. That's up from, just to give people context, David, up from 3.4% in November. This is not in the target range for the Reserve Bank of 2 to 3%. This is a really big problem for the economy, for the RBA, but for the government, isn't it?
So, I mean, you're right to remind people what the target band is. That's 2 to 3%. That's where the Reserve Bank wants inflation to sit. If it gets above 3%, well, that's a problem. If it gets below 2%, you know, that's a bit of a problem as well. Anyway, 3.8% is clearly well outside that target band. There are a bunch of numbers when inflation data drops. It can get a bit confusing, particularly at the moment as they're shifting from monthly to, well, quarterly, then to monthly, and now a new monthly track. 3.8% is the headline figure. The one the Reserve Bank really looks at is the trimmed mean, and it's a little higher than was expected as well at 3.3%, up from 3.2%, and the quarterly trimmed mean was 0.9. So it does seem to mean an interest rate hike next week is now perhaps not locked in, but looking very, very likely. I think the markets are saying more than a 70% chance of a rate hike next week. And clearly the Treasurer is preparing for that reality as well in the reaction that we've seen so far from Jim Chalmers. It's an unwelcome number, he said. It's higher than we would like. And very quickly, PK saying this is about private sector spending, not public spending, not the government's fault, in other words.
Yeah, not the government's fault, but I also observed in his language am I reading too much into it? Some responsibility. I think the government knows, and Jim Chalmers knows, that there is a lot of scrutiny on the government, and they need to sort of take some ownership. Obviously, they can't control what the RBA does, but inflation is an economy-wide issue. Like, the government has a big role to play in inflation, as does the RBA. They're equal partners in many ways.
Yeah, I mean, let's be clear. PK, we know that government spending is a problem in a budget sense, that, you know, we have no sign of a surplus, a return to surplus anytime soon. We know that, sure, public spending might not have been the contributing factor over this last quarter, but that doesn't mean that reining in public spending might actually not help the situation. If the government were to tap the brakes on public spending, that would normally put a downward impact on inflation. So it does mean, you know, we're in, what, the end of January, budget due in May, we're sort of getting into that pre-budget period. It does mean that period now becomes one of heightened inflation, higher risk of rate hikes, maybe even a rate hike next week. And that changes the context for, you know, what the government needs to do and needs to be seen to be doing in this budget.
It just shows how difficult this year will be for the government, David. I mean, we've been very focused rightly on the Bondi terror attack, the sort of subsequent laws, the tensions around that, and that Royal Commission will be unfolding throughout the year. So that's an ongoing difficulty. And then, you know, the biggest elephant in the room, which is, of course, it's the economy is stupid. That's the biggest issue. The Prime Minister knows it. That's why he's been very keen to focus his attention, it's the government's attention on the economy. They know that that's really ultimately what makes and breaks governments. It really is. I mean, there is, you know, no more influential factor. It's number one, number two, number three for people. And so we are now entering a territory where the government's going to have to make some very difficult decisions in the May budget. They know that. They've been pretty open about that privately. And none of those will be popular. All of them will be contested. No spending cuts are ever easy to deliver, particularly for a Labor government where expectations are high for you know, constant pushing for more funding, more spending. There's, again, can we just go to the other elephant in the room? No reckoning over our tax base, the ongoing issue. Still, there's inertia on that issue. And so it's like this wicked problem that keeps getting worse. And an economy that's not going in the direction the Treasurer wanted it to. And, you know, he's a confidence player. The Treasurer is a bit like the Prime Minister in that sense. I think this will knock his confidence as he goes into this cycle. I'm giving you a bit of a psychoanalysis, but I'm going to give it to you because I've spoken to senior Labor people who are like, this is really problematic. This is not good. We're going into a difficult cycle now. The only thing, and we're going to get into that discussion in a second, the only thing saving them, can I say, from the intense scrutiny that will be delivered by the public, which is, you know, on Tuesday, if you're going to get an interest rate hike, do you think you're just going to go that Michelle Bullock? I mean, most people probably couldn't name her. I don't know, actually. I don't know what the polling is on that. But you're going to be grumpy at the government, right? You're going to be like, what's going on here? I'm grumpy.
Governments always cop the blame, you know,
yeah,
for situations
like this. But the only thing
like
saving
this.
Them is the topsy-turvy, brouhaha, ridiculous sideshow Bob behaviour of the coalition, okay?
Which we'll get to. But, I mean, maybe this is getting into a bit of psychoanalysis as well.
Do it.
But maybe, you know, does Jim Chalmers internally, when he sits down with the Prime Minister and the ERC, the Expenditure Review Committee, have an opportunity to say, look, you know, this inflation problem is, you know, it's proving stickier than we would like. It's proving more problematic. Politically, we know, cost of living, number one issue. You know, even bigger issue than you know, tackling anti-Semitism and the issues we've been focused on over the summer. We got an opposition that's in chaos. Is this the opportunity to do something more substantive in this budget on reform? You know, to come back to what you were talking about on tax and everything else, does this shift the dynamic internally to a stronger appetite to actually get on and do something? I don't know. It's interesting. There are a few reasons just to unpack it why we've seen this higher read on inflation today. Some of those months and quarters from 2024 have now dropped out of the annual read, so that the better months and quarters have gone. You've got the energy rebates coming off at a state level and federally, although the federal one I don't think really came off until the end of December. So it's more those state rebates coming off. And then you've got this sticky services inflation as well. That's the problem the government, well, the economy is finding it hard to deal with. So look, you're right. If the opposition, you know, next week would be an opportunity to go in hard on this issue.
Just any competence. Sorry, but like this is just laughable, isn't it? That they are going in. I just want to give the context. They are going in to the first proper sitting week of the year, David, where the Nationals leader is about to potentially get rolled. Unlikely, we'll get into that, right? We've got clearly Susan Lee's leadership is still, they are gunning for her, right? We know it will happen. It's about when, not if. The if is determined. I say that with absolute confidence. So, but on a week where we'll probably have an interest rate hike. I mean, what? That is on territory that the coalition has historically, although as we saw from that election survey that came out after the election, they are losing that stronghold. But that's on territory that they've always been in control of, the economy. And they can't run that line.
It's not just because of their leadership travails and uncertainty over what direction they want to go in, who they want to be as a party, all of that. On the economy, you know, I think they've been losing ground on this for a while for a few reasons. I mean, they went to an election. Let's not forget, as the government likes to remind us at every opportunity, the coalition went to an election saying we should have a higher personal income tax rate and a higher deficit, at least for the next couple of years. They were all over the shop, I think, when the government was implementing some of the, sure, they call them band-aid solutions, but did they support them or not was always a conundrum for the coalition, these rebates and things to help deal with the cost of living pressure people are under. So, yeah, the coalition need to sort out where they stand on these things, not to mention their own internal woes, before they can have any chance of using what typically is an absolute easy weapon to bludgeon a government with, an interest rate hike.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it should be so easy for them right now, and yet they're not landing any blows. So let's go to why they're not landing any blows, yep. David. Every political journalist in the country is bracing for a Liberal leadership spill either next week, the week after, or the March sittings. There's a few options, I've been told. The three scenarios, as they've been explained to me, that there's a leadership spill, that they wait to the end of the week, that there's lots of different ways it might play out, and I'm not sure one's firmed. What has firmed, though, because he said it, is Nationals backbencher Colin Boyce, who told Sky News he'll challenge David Littleproud's leadership to give his party an option. Now, that's quite dramatic.
So here's the difficulty that Susan Lee and David Littleproud are in. It only takes one, right, to blow up the issue again for another day or so. I got the feeling over the last 48 hours that the heat was coming out of all the frenzy around Susan Lee and the leadership. I agree with you. I think, it's very hard to see how she survives the full term. But in terms of a push next week when Parliament's back, it felt like some of the momentum was coming out of that for, various reasons. The right couldn't settle on a candidate, Hastie or Angus Taylor, and the moderates were pushing back. So it just felt like some of that was calming down a touch in terms of the timing. And then what happens? Colin Boyce, a Nationals backbencher that most may not have heard of, but was speculated for some time to be thinking about jumping ship to One Nation, he jumps on Sky News and says, no, I'm definitely not going to One Nation. What I am going to do is challenge David Littleproud on Monday for the leadership of the Nationals. The point there, PK, it just can take one lone wolf. And it may only be a lone wolf. That's what's a little unclear at the moment to create this trouble. Other Nats do seem to be bemused at what he's done. It's far from clear that this is going to go anywhere apart from creating a big headache for David Littleproud. But, suddenly we're now focused back on the Nats.
We certainly are. So David Littleproud, while we've been recording, has issued a statement.
Right.
He says, as leader of the Nationals, I have always respected the party room's decisions and direction. That includes the right to voice different opinions. We celebrate that freedom within the Nationals. I stand by my record as leader of the Nationals and what our party room has achieved through important policy work and standing up for regional, rural and remote Australia. No commentary on the spill. Just a defiant my record. Now, his record is that in the last 8 months, he's had two divorces. Now, I respect people's right to divorce. I've been very clear about this. I think divorce is an important right in our community. Maybe he's having a few too many divorces. Are you know, like it's looking, that's how the Liberals see it. I'm calling it for what it is. The Liberals, and I think they are largely right in terms of the court of public opinion here, think, well, you had your first breakup and then you quickly got back together. Now you're doing it again. This is the big question with Little Proud. What's to stop him doing it again over some other issue in another month or two?
Yep. And look, that's the reality for Liberals, right? Why they're so worried about getting back into bed with him. But just on that statement, I mean, you're right. The divorces, David Littleproud sort of overlooks the loss of Jacinta Nambujibba-Price to the Liberals and the loss of Barnaby Joyce to the Nationals. I would say, though, that certainly amongst the Nats I spoke to over the last week or so, there's very strong support for the way that he handled all of that. You know, I'm not saying people are enamoured with what a wonderful leader David Littleproud is, not all of them within the Nats, but generally speaking, they're comfortable with decision to all go after the three Senate shadow ministers were offers of resignation were accepted by Susan Lee, and then to break the coalition. There was general support for that, and even the guy who stood against him after the election for the leadership, Matt Canavan, was very supportive of how David Littleproud handled all of that. And I'm told that over the last 6 months or so, there's been, I don't know, a bit more... friendly interaction between the two of them, a bit more respect between the two of them. This has been sort of the warring camps in the Nats, but over the last 6 months, not so much. So whether it's a detente, whether things are improving internally, look, then suddenly you get Colin Boyce doing this today, but I'm still not convinced where we're sitting at this point on Wednesday afternoon that this is going to amount to much. What's your best guess? Does David Littleproud still have the job Monday afternoon?
Well, I spoke to someone senior who knows stuff and who said to me, you know, doesn't matter what the Liberals think. He still has the support of the party room because they want this behaviour. This is what we are missing, perhaps. Like, well, I'm not missing it, but you know what I mean? Like, they want this. This is what they want. Mm. They want this kind of renegade behaviour. Like, and that's why he's like, oh, I'm standing up for my party room. So in a weird kind of counterintuitive to sort of the way a normal person's brain would work, he's kind of being rewarded for sort of flexing his muscle like this. Now, how long that lasts, though, is the big question. So does he survive Monday? Well, as we record on a Wednesday, David, yes. Yes. I don't even think there are enough votes for a spill motion at this stage in the Nationals, right?
That's what I think. Yeah. Colin Boyce is not going to become the leader of the Nationals. I think we can confidently predict. But is he stalking horse for someone else?
Exactly. I haven't nailed yet. So I only share things that I think I'm pretty sure about. So I haven't nailed if he's a stalking horse for someone else. But he's trying something on here, isn't he? And he is trying to test the numbers, that's for sure. That's what this does. That's the role it plays. And it does destabilise Littleproud's leadership, regardless, even if he survives, right?
When parties like this are in such a weakened position as they are, this is what happens. And this is the situation both leaders find themselves in, at the whim of the lone wolf, someone willing to roll the grenade in. All of a sudden it's a frenzy of speculation. Even if on this occasion, as we're both saying, I don't think this necessarily amounts to much, but it's more chaos.
It's more chaos, yeah. So at this stage he survives, let's say that, but it doesn't settle the ongoing problem of at some point they're going to need to get back together. They need to go to some marriage counselling. And what I want to share in the pod is that I've spoken to senior Liberals who say, under the next arrangement, if we are to get back together, and they kind of need to if they want to form coalition government in the traditional way, you know, as has always been determined. Also, the sort of elaborate Senate tickets and placement. I mean, the Nationals basically are out of business unless they get back together. So they're going to have to be pragmatic at some point. But the Liberals are going to drive a harder bargain. That's the view. And that's the view in the capital C Conservatives as well, under a different leadership model as well, that they need to sort of say, hey, you can't just have tantrums all the time. We need to be able to sort things out. And maybe the coalition looks different. That's all I'm saying. Like, that's the view.
Yeah, I think this is really interesting. How do you reshape the deal, the partnership, the arrangement, the marriage between these two? Do you have more capacity to part ways? And how on earth does that work? How can you seriously present yourself as an alternative government if you're not sure whether one half of the partnership is going to go in a different direction on something? you know, you can see the argument for having the accommodation to do that, but in practice, I just don't know how practical it is. Anyway, I think it's fascinating how they, because, you know, if they simply were to front up next week, standing next to each other saying, no, all fine now, no one's going to buy that. No one's going to buy that.
No, no one's going to buy that. And look, the damage is done in the public. Look at the opinion polls. There's been more that have come out. One Nation's still surging. So this is, that still has destabilised the coalition brand, all of these kind of, all the shenanigans, I'll call it. Look, just finally, David, some sort of a really interesting intervention from former Prime Minister Scott Morrison. Like, while all the leadership questions have been bubbling away, he's made some big headlines today. He's delivered a speech at an anti-Semitism conference in Israel, and he's called for Islamic preachers to be accredited and for their teachings to be translated into English. He's suggested imams need to face a sort of post-Bondi reckoning, as Christians did after the Child Sex Abuse Royal Commission. And he said his suggestion basically means, you know, provides a sort of practical template for dealing with a more radical tenet of Islam. But David, would it work though? I'm not convinced that it's something that you could do without a lot of controversy, obviously, but also whether it would be effective.
So my reading of what Scott Morrison's talking about here and the opinion piece that he's put to paper, he's not talking about the government, the state, registering or licensing imams and saying who can and can't, you know, preach. He's saying that the Islamic institutions or the Muslim faith itself needs to do this. He points to Christian and Jewish denominations operating under strong governance frameworks, he says, but not so much Islamic institutions. He says they remain fragmented, inconsistently governed, and that must change. He wants nationally consistent, self-regulated standards across the Islamic faith. Look, I guess the counterpoint to that is, well, sure, an individual church like the Catholic Church, for example, might have that, but across the Christian faith, there are all sorts of different beliefs and permutations and breakaways, and they're not exactly regulated under a consistent framework. And clearly, you know, it's enormously problematic if you were only to apply some sort of licensing or registration regime to one faith and not others. It was interesting, I thought, this morning on Radio National to hear the Liberal Senator Andrew Bragg almost endorse what Scott Morrison's saying here, saying, yes, we should be having a conversation at least about these sorts of things. We need to be willing to call out, as he put it, what is the problem here, and that is this mutation of Islam, and the Islamic community, you know, needs to do more, in other words. It is worth pointing out, though, that, of course, most Islamic leaders condemned what happened at Bondi. They do this regularly. So, look, it's a problematic proposal, but and the government's been quick to shoot it down. But, PK, I don't know, what do you think about this idea that he's put forward about a stronger governance framework within the Islamic faith?
I think it's something that can only actually come from the Islamic community themselves. I don't think you want sort of big government. In fact, I've even had some conservative liberals contact me and sort of say, what a ridiculous idea, you know, like, you know, and they're the people sort of really banging on about, you know, we need to take radical Islam seriously. But the idea of big government coming in and playing some sort of role is something that anyone would sort of raise their eyebrows at. The other part of this, David, is Andrew Bragg might say when asked on Radio National, you know, oh, well, this particular faith has this particular issue. That's why, you know, he agreed that there should be a focus on it. But we're in a democracy which is multicultural, multi-faith. You don't design laws for one faith. I'm sorry, but you know, you don't design frameworks for one faith. That is not the way things work, and nor should they, right?
No, exactly. And how would this work if, for example, you know, the Islamic community decided we're going to register our imams, and there's one who's too extreme and they don't have a license to preach, and they go and start, you know, preaching in the shadows, off the books. What happens then? I mean, is that when the government, the state, steps in? And it's, you can see the problems all over.
Yeah,
this.
And even the argument he makes, like, how does that fit in with the push last week from the sort of right-wing side of politics, which was an anti-big government, anti-authoritarian, anti-telling us what to do. These things are seriously intellectually incoherent to put them together.
Yeah, it's a good point. And let's not forget, of course, that what did the coalition split over? Essentially, it was this bill on hate groups and the Nationals voting no to set up a process that could lead to the banning of groups like Hizbut Tahrir. They were not happy with that process and how it would step on the toes of freedom of speech. Now you've got Scott Morrison saying they need to go further than that sort of legislation and actually ban or not give a license to individual imams. It's just putting a spotlight back again, I think, on that whole issue that fractured the coalition last week. And I don't know if that is the reminder that most Liberals or Nationals particularly want right now.
Yeah, and I'm just going to add one more point. I just can't help myself because it's Scott Morrison. Don't discount how much so many Liberals just roll their eyes when he pops his head up. I'm just telling you based on the contact I've had. They're like, oh, please, we don't need this guy in our debate. Thank you. He was politically toxic. Don't forget that. And they're not great enthusiasts for his contributions, some of them. I'm sure some are. I'm just talking about the ones that made their way into my DMs. That's it for politics now for today. David, it's great to be reunited yet again. Thank you for singing to me.
Happy birthday, PK.
Oh, look, can I say this morning I had a conference call too with Fran Kelly, who also sang the song to me. She said I didn't respond with enough enthusiasm. Apologies, Fran.
But will she do it on air? Well, yeah, come on, Fran.
She just didn't think I was, and so I felt bad about that. I hope I showed you the enthusiasm you deserve for being sung to. Because when you get serenaded by your colleagues, it really, you know you've made it.
I know, right?
God, hilarious. I'll be back tomorrow for The Party Room with Fran. We will take your short voice notes, email them to thepartyroom@abc.net.au. See you, David.
See you, PK.